Live, on location, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, along with Trig V. Olson of the Lincoln Project. It is Wednesday, the 21st of August, 2024. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. And Mr. Zommers, it is
Pump Day!
There you go. The camel got out of the bathroom. There's no reverb in hour two. Very good. Glad to have you all along with us. Many thanks to Pat Kreitlow, to Kelly Robinson, and to Dr. Kristen Lyerly for joining us in hour number one. Big show here in hour two at the bottom of the hour, or ish. John Nichols, the progressive, longtime Wisconsinite, knows Wisconsin politics on the Democratic side very well, coming up after the bottom of the hour break. But joining Trig V. Olson and I right now at the table, so happy to have him here, known him for a long time. He was at one time the youngest chief of staff to the governor in the country under Tommy George Thompson, went on to be a great secretary of commerce for the state of Wisconsin, has a very successful lobbying group. And it's a fantastic hockey player and owner. We'll get to that in a minute. Bill McCoshin, welcome to the table.
Great to be with you guys.
It's great to be here. We've been wanting to have you on together for a while.
If someone took a picture of us 25 years ago and said, you three guys will be at the DNC, we would all said, nah.
No, absolutely. You're right. We were talking about that. This is your first DNC proper, right?
Yeah,
mine too.
My 10th convention and the first.
I've been to five RNCs. This is the first DNC.
Never got to an RNC. I've been to a lot of state Republican conventions, but no, I've never been to a Democratic one either. But here we are, two former Republicans and one that still hanging in there, right?
Yeah.
On the Republican side. And Seinfeld once said, there's nothing
wrong with
that.
Are you officially former, both of you?
Yeah.
I still consider, so people ask me that all the time. I mean, I guess I was a Republican, but, you know, whatever. I didn't turn in my card because I never had one. I still consider myself a conservative. I just don't consider myself part of MAGA or
there are a lot
the
of
Republican
people like that.
Party, right?
Yeah. Like, Sean Hannity. Yeah. I know you probably don't watch him anymore or maybe never did, but he calls himself a conservative, not a Republican.
Back during the Bush era, yeah. Of course. But there was an evolution there, too. But, I just think, there are a lot of people like, and particularly I think in Wisconsin, right? Like all my buddies, like one of the things Bill and I have always had in common that I've always liked about you, Bill, is the fact that your high school buddies are your best buddies in the world.
They're still
played
my
hockey
best
with
buddies.
In Superior and beat up on guys from River Falls. But and mine are the ones who were getting beat up on by guys from Superior.
They are still my best buddies.
Yeah.
Talked to one of them on my way in, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk Bill a little bit, and I so appreciate you coming on because, you know, Trigby will tell you, not a lot of Republicans like to come on the show anymore. And I'm not sure. We've invited Schimming on 100 times.
They should come
We've
on.
Invited
they
Walker
should come
on.
On. They should
know
come
they should
on.
Come
yeah.
on.
Right? Yeah. Even if only 10% of the audience agrees with what they say,
right.
you make that 12% or 13%, right? I mean, every little bit helps. If you're not fighting for your message with the broader audience, what's the point?
Right. Right? I totally agree. That's why you've been so good at 100%. Your jobs over the years. And you're not here. I want the audience to understand. Bill's not here to speak for, you know, the entire Republican Party or anything like that. But did you watch Ted Lasso? Are you a Ted Lasso fan?
I've never seen it.
Really?
I certainly know what it is,
I didn't see it when it first started. My sister had to get me into it. And about a year and a half ago, I watched all three seasons. I binge-watched it. And now I can't get enough. But for those who don't know, it's about a guy, an American that goes overseas to the U.K. to take and run. He was a college football coach at Wichita State and then goes over to run a soccer team. And
right.
He's never played soccer. And Ted Lasso was the title character. One of my favorite scenes, those Lasso fans will know this, is when he's playing darts with kind of the villain of the series. He challenges him to this dart match and ownership of the team is on the line and thinks he could beat the Englander, thinks he could beat Ted Lasso. And Lasso just whips him. And he says, you know, if you had been more curious, you might have asked me about my childhood and know that I played darts every Sunday with my dad until I was 16 when he passed away. And he said, it taught me a lesson. Don't be judgmental. Be curious.
Yeah.
And so that's
curious is a very good thing in politics.
Isn't that great?
100%.
It was one of the things I love best about Tommy Thompson is he was always curious. And I think that makes for not only a good politician, but a good leader, right? That means you're listening. You're getting different perspectives. And Tommy always encouraged sort of free flow of information or debate in his presence, right? He thought that that was the best way to do it. And Jim Clouser was the same way. And I think it was one of the reasons why Tommy was so successful.
And we've talked about this. For those that don't know Bill's background, I mean, you were the youngest chief of staff to any governor in the country at one time.
Still hold that record.
How old were you?
27 and 29 when I was cabinet secretary. The youngest in Wisconsin. Wow. Those will be my little asterisks on my obituary.
But, I mean, you did a great job of both of them. And, I mean, in particular, the commerce secretary. Bill would come around to places like Yuba, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The smallest incorporated.
Potosi. Yeah. Yeah.
And you, I mean,
Belmont.
Don't take offense to this. You were kind of the Pete Buttigieg of the Thompson administration because you were young, you were smart, you were articulate, and you got things done and you developed infrastructure.
So, you know the backstory, Todd, but for the listeners that don't, when Tommy offered me that job, I was 29 years old, and it's a Senate confirmed position. And I said, "Are you sure about this? I don't really have any business background." And he said, "I am. I have confidence in you." And honestly, that's what it took. And I ended up getting confirmed 30-3. Two of the three guys who voted against me ended up serving time. True story.
Was it Gary George and Qual?
No.
Or the two?
Qual and Brian Burke. Yeah. The other one was Lynn Edelman, who's now a federal judge.
Right. So was generally a really good guy.
Yeah. When I took the job, though, we had a discussion about economy in 1994 and 5. I took it in December of 94. It was doing pretty well in Wisconsin. And I said, I'll do it if we can focus on areas that haven't done so well so far. Yeah. And Southwest Wisconsin was at the top of the list. So, man, I spent a lot of time in Southwest Wisconsin with your former boss, Dale Schultz, and with you. And it was phenomenal. Yeah. And it was easy, right? Because people just wanted to be heard. They wanted to be seen. And, you know, we brought a couple nickels out every now and then, you know, to this community or that community with some seabed money or CDBG money, and it all worked great. And that was the fun part about Thompson is he was a proactive governor in a very good way, right?
Tell people a story, or at least a little bit of that don't know this, because the Tommy Thompson that was governor was a transformational leader, in my opinion. And one of the things is one of the first things he did is reach across the aisle and got the Democratic majority leader in Tim Cullen to join his cabinet. And we were in Richland Center. We had Mark Kupp, and through Tommy's work, and through again Spencer Black, one of the most liberal Democrats in the state assembly and legislature, and Dale Schultz at that time one of the most conservative. And Tommy said, "I'm not going out there and putting my neck on the line unless you guys are going to get this done." And they did. And 35 years later, it's one of the largest conservation projects in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That is the Republican Party, Bill, that I was proud to be a part of.
Yeah, and that's the one I grew up in, and that's how I learned. You know this because you worked in the legislature, as did you, Trigvi, but the Democrats had the majority for seven of Tommy's first 8 years. Yeah. He didn't get the state Senate until 1993.
He kept appointing people cabinet secretaries.
Until we got
there. Bob Wood and I would get sent out to different places.
Until we lived
in a shack on Lake Wisota when we finally won with Zine, with Bill Skews, like all of us.
But it taught us a lesson. If we wanted to enact his agenda, we had to get it through a Democratic legislature, right? And those are unbelievable life lessons. It meant you had to form relationships with people on the other side. It meant you had to have discussions with people on the other side. And from time to time, it meant compromise. You didn't get everything you wanted. But we were able to move the needle and advance his agenda in a very big way under Democratic control of the legislature. Those are great life lessons.
Occasionally, it led to, I'm not going to win in the next election. I won't attack you, and you don't attack me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you don't see that.
It was pretty rare for Tommy to anymore. Go in, parachute into a Democratic incumbent's district and trash them. That just wasn't how he operated. No.
And I want to start getting this, Bill, a little bit. You nailed it. It meant getting things done that you kind of had to take three quarters of a loaf.
Right.
And people would pound the hell out of each other on the floor.
Right.
And they'd go walk down to the avenue, and Ellis was buying drinks, a former Senate Majority Leader, and say, "You SOB, you really got me. What do you want to drink?"
Yeah.
What has happened in your opinion, you know politics better than anybody I know in this state, and I'm not trying to point fingers at either side, but just in general, what has happened to that politics in Wisconsin?
It's too impersonal. We thrive on clicks and social media and things like that. We don't have conversations. I mean, if we wanted to get a deal done, we knew where the Democrats went that night. We knew where the Republicans went that night. And so that meant we might work 14 or 16 hours that day, but we were going to have those conversations. We were going to have them in a toned-down way. We were going to have them in a social way, and we were going to find a way to get to yes. And I actually won a couple bets with Tommy. He didn't think I could convince Larry Svoboda to leave the legislature. For your viewers that don't remember Larry, he was a hard – I would say he was a conservative Democrat serving in the first assembly district, which is the thumb of Wisconsin, Door County. He had been in the legislature 20 years, and this was actually how Tommy and I connected. In 1988, Tommy had come up and worked to help a guy named Bob Papke run against Svoboda. He was up there almost every week. I was working for the Republican Party, living in the Bay Motel on 9th and Military, which is still there. The Bay Family Restaurant, I think, is the best breakfast in Green Bay if you get a chance to go there. It's still there. And the Friday before the election, Tommy was asking how these candidates were going to do, and I said, Papke's going to lose. I had no polling. Yeah, you know, I don't know.
Right. Just your gut.
It was my gut. I was up there all the time. And he said, why? And I said, well, Larry's pro-life. It's very pro-life up here. There's no reason to vote against him, right? Mm-hmm. You got to give voters a reason to go against an incumbent. They didn't have one. And on election night, Larry won 60-40. Yeah. Tommy hired me that night.
I bet he did.
It just goes to show, if you can connect with people, it doesn't really matter what your party is. You're going to be there for a while unless you make a pretty big mistake. Beating an incumbent's a tough, tough deal. Yeah. In the United States of America, only one statewide Republican lost in 2022, and it was the governor of Nevada. That's it.
Wow.
So, you know, incumbents have a pretty high retention rate. You got to run a smart campaign. You got to run a shrewd campaign. You got to give voters a reason to change their mind, right? If you've been accustomed to voting for Tammy Baldwin for a couple cycles, you're probably going to stay with that custom unless there's a real good reason to change your mind, right?
Yeah.
And to give her a little bit of credit, since we're at the DNC, in 2012, Tommy was still the most popular Republican in Wisconsin. He was the favorite to win that that Senate seat. Immediately following the it was a pretty contentious primary. He beat Jeff Fitzgerald and Hovde. You know, she said he's not who he used to be, and she burned that in.
It was a magic line.
Yeah.
It worked. Come on back. We're going to talk a little hockey of what's happening here at the DNC and more with Bill McCoshin, Trigby Olsen, the All Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, where it is now 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. We're pursuing truth down here in the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and we're absolutely having fun doing it. I feel like this is the old boys network getting back here. All we need is a couple of beers.
Exactly.
We're here with Trigby Olsen.
From Great
Day. Well, the last time we were together was at a bar. It was for the debates.
Yeah,
That's right. Milwaukee.
Yeah. Whitetail Bar in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It was great. Here with Trigby Olsen, former Republican like myself, now a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, and Mr. Bill McCoshin, a current Republican, former Secretary of Commerce under Tommy Thompson, chief of staff for Tommy as well, a successful lobbyist and owner of the Janesville Jets. Going to get to that in a minute, Bill.
Awesome.
I want to, and again, you're not here to speak on behalf of your former boss any more than I am or anything else. So I don't mean this in a particular way. But again, under the auspices of trying to be curious and not judgmental, we have a lot of people that call this show and ask this question because they know I'm a former Republican. They know what Trigby is.
And a lot of them like Tommy.
And to your point earlier, I personally don't think the only things that I have probably changed or matured my position on from when I was an active Republican is I consider myself more pro-choice than I do pro-life. I think it should be a certain window. But, you know, I have nieces, and I just simply feel that God forbid that they be raped or something like that, that they that they deserve that right to over their own body. So I've changed from pro-life to pro-choice, and as still a bad pheasant hunter and turkey hunter, I certainly believe in the Second Amendment, but I also think there should be reasonable laws to protect people, like red flag laws and the like. That's just me. Help us understand, through someone who's lived this, when Donald Trump says things this week, such as, quote, we're a failed nation, isn't that a beautiful phrase, unquote. Paul Ryan, former Speaker of the House, one of Republicans' favorite son of Wisconsin, Republican-wise, has called Trump a narcissist, an autocratic leader, and is, quote, not capable to be the next president of the United States, unquote. How is it, and I'm not talking about one person, but someone who says we're a failed country, a failed nation, that's a beautiful phrase. Tommy Thompson, back in his gubernatorial days, would have never uttered that. Donald Trump wouldn't make a pimple on Tommy Thompson's political ass. So why is it that Republicans still support that guy?
I would say he's got an amazing following. I think when we got together in Milwaukee last year, I was still hopeful that someone more conservative was going to get through the primary process. I consider myself more conservative than, quote unquote, the party today. That isn't what happened. I mean, he's got an incredible following that doesn't budge. It doesn't matter what he says or does. That following doesn't move. But I'm here to tell you that's not big enough to win either. In order to win in the next 75 days, he has to get some of the independents to come his way.
But he's never going to do what he needs to do that.
And that's the challenge on the Republican side. Can he be disciplined enough to do what it takes? And honestly, talking about that isn't winning. We're talking about the economy, talking about immigration, those are winning messages for Republican. Every national poll shows that today. Those are things he needs to be talking about. I don't care about crowd size. I don't care about Kamala's last night in Milwaukee. I don't care about his in Atlanta. It doesn't matter to me because you're singing to the choir. But as political operatives, we would all say, okay, yeah, you want to do some GOTV and fire up the base at the end, the final 10 days. You don't need to do that in September. I'm for more strategic hits like he did yesterday in Michigan. I think he did a pretty good job at that.
But I'm not talking about – I agree with you. The 35% or whatever it is, the Trump people, they're never going to move. They're with him till the end. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
What people call in and ask me, Todd, help us understand as a former Republican, why do people like Tommy Thompson, why do people like – Rob Coles, I mean, he's retiring now, and Rob's a wonderful guy, and I consider him a friend. Why is it that, you know, Robin Voss, who you may disagree with politically, he's not a political idiot. Why do people continue to politically genuflect to this guy who is antithetical to the Republican Party that you and I and Trigvy grew up in?
Well, he certainly got a big stick, right? He doesn't walk softly,
but he carries
a big stick, and evidenced by your prior guest was Kristen Lierley. Well, the person that won that primary was endorsed by Donald Trump. Now, Roger Roth tried to run as being sort of pseudo-endorsed by Trump. Didn't work.
Those ads were over the top. Those immigration
weird guy?
Ads. Yeah, no, Roger Roth.
You're thinking Andre Jacques with the boxer?
Yeah. Well, the guy who won was
Tony Weed.
Weed.
Tony
not
Weed.
Weird.
Weed actually got the endorsement from Trump.
He did right away.
And Roth tried to steal it.
Michaels got the endorsement in the 22 primary against Clayfish. She was largely considered the heavy favorite in that race. Michaels got in, spent about $13 million of his own money, and got the Trump endorsement and ended up winning the primary by 5 points.
Right. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what makes Wisconsin great, because this is one of the – we want to do this in all seriousness. We tried to do it the last time. It didn't work out. Beyond your political career, Bill, you've gotten involved in something that brings people together, and that's what I love. Talk about the Janesville
Jets. Magical.
Well, I'm going to steal some line that you used in your interview with Dr. Lierley, and that is my wife and I found something that's bigger than ourselves.
Yeah.
And that is giving back to young, dedicated athletes who want to play college hockey. And they're willing to commit and come from all over the world to Janesville, Wisconsin. This will be our 16th year in the North American Hockey League. If you drive down Milton Avenue in Janesville today, you are now going to see walls going up for the new Woodman Center, which will be a two-sheet arena and a local convention center like nothing in Rock County. It's going to attract not only sports tourism, but weekday traffic for conventions, small to mid-sized conventions, you know, it's going to produce $22 million annually into the local community for a $48 million facility. For us, we did this 16 years ago because we had had a lot of success. You know, we had good fortune in our life, and we wanted to give back. And this was something I knew. I had been a hockey player myself, was fortunate to be on a couple state championship teams, and wanted to give kids an opportunity. And this has been a tremendous – it's never been great financially, but for us personally, watching the joy of these kids get those college degree or college scholarships, some of whom have gone on to play in the NHL, it's in little old Janesville, Wisconsin. Yeah, yeah. It is. We want to have you guys down. Do one of your on the road. We'll either bring you to the Whiskey Ranch, which is one of my favorite places.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Like to do that for pregame. Yeah, or yeah. Havana Coffee is another good one. Or the Citrus Cafe. All of my players, regardless of where they come from, and many are from Europe or Canada or across this country, love Citrus Cafe. So that's their favorite breakfast place in Janesville. So depending on what time of day you guys come, we'll find the right spot. And there'll be, I'm sure you got quite a few listeners in Rock County.
Well, it's one of the things we hear going around the state is that people really, they love it. The most interaction and engagement we get is when we do stories like this. That bring people 100%. Together.
Yeah.
And think about how good it is for Janesville, right? Like those kids live with billets, I assume.
Yeah, they do.
It's bringing kids from all over the world. You know, I know at one point you had, I think it was a Belarusian kid. Or a Russian kid, somewhere from that part of the world. I forget where it was from, but I was like, that's a place I've been. How good is it?
Or up against the clock, my friend. I want to make sure. People want to get involved with Janesville Jets. If you got kids that want to play, how do they get a hold of you?
www.janesvillejets.com.
Easy enough. www.janesvillejets.com.
Thanks for the time.
Bill McCaffin, you're one of the best. We appreciate you, my friend. Thank
good
you so much.
Good to see you.
We'll be back on the other side with Mr. John Nichols, also one of the best from the Democratic side. We are live here from Chicago at the Chicago's United Center. I had a moment. Sorry about that. It's the Mad Cow. We'll come back here in a minute. It's the Civic Media Radio Network. Location from the Democratic National Convention in good old United Center, Chicago, Illinois. Along with Trigby Olson of the Lincoln Project, happy to have you along. Mr. Zomer is back at the World Headquarters. What did you dial up for us there to come back on with?
By request from Brian Kelly, Riding in My Car by NRBQ, another Chicago band.
Well, he deserves a request because he got his Dr. Lyerly in the gate, and also he's an adopted Chicago native here who helps us navigate the city.
Heck yeah, it was totally fun. I love that band, NRBQ. I got into them they're a long time band. I got into them a couple of years ago from Len Casper, the Cubs, when he was a Cubs broadcaster. He said, someone asked him, "What are you listening to lately?" He goes, "I'm into NRBQ." I'm like, the heck is that? I listen to it, and I'm like, this is fantastic.
Look at that. See, a little Chicago data music. We appreciate it, Mr. Kelly. Appreciate it, Mr. Zomers. Joining us at the table now, and by the way, thanks to so much for Bill McCaffin for being here. Joining us now, another wonderful guest here at the table, John Nichols. He is with The Nation, of course, The Cap Times, The Progressive. He is an author and all-around swell guy, as we say back in Southwest Wisconsin. John Nichols, welcome back to the show. We appreciate it. One cleanup on Todd's part. I said from the Democratic perspective, and I appreciate you clarifying. You're not necessarily here from a Democratic perspective, although you have a history of supporting Democrats.
Absolutely. The Cap Times was founded as a Republican paper. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in those days, the Democratic Party was a right-wing party that was full of segregationists, mm-hmm. right? In fact, you could pretty much say that many of the current criticisms of the Republican Party could have been lodged at the Democratic Party. Machine politics, et cetera, and stuff like that. And truthfully, Cap Times, even The Nation, which is a very left-wing publication, found Republicans that it could say very good things about for a long time. The moment we're in, right, is not a unique moment in American history. It happens. Political parties go through transition. They go different places. I always remind people in 1988 that Michael Dukakis carried West Virginia, lost California. Right?
Wow, yeah.
So
yeah.
When you you start to put it together. And so the Republican Party has changed a great deal. Democratic Party has changed a great deal. I think the Democratic Party is, at this point, why it's fascinating, why this convention's fascinating, is the Democratic Party is actually going through a major change right now. This is a fundamental change. Huge. Mm-hmm. And most media misses it because most media isn't ideological, and that's a big problem. Yeah. I love ideology. I think it's fantastic. I like libertarians. I like Greens. I like the whole bit because America is an ideological country. One of the biggest lies is this fantasy of, well, we're all in the middle or we're all blah, blah, blah. Most boring thing in the world. It makes us sound like a pathetic, unthinking, useless
bunch
of people.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's just not true. I've never been in a bar where somebody's like, well, you know, I really don't care that much.
Who wins the game?
I want everything to be boring. You know? Boy, I hate it when these politicians say interesting things. It's a lie that politicians in political class tells themselves. America actually does like things. But what the problem is, the corporations, by and large, won't let you say things, right?
Right.
It's because the money in politics is a real issue. And so what you're seeing at this Democratic convention is a fascinating thing. It's the most pro-union convention in American history. Both by a mile. The previous winner on that was Abe Lincoln in 1860. And Lincoln, of course, was a very left-wing supporter of trade unions. In fact, even in 1860, went and campaigned with the shoe workers and the mill workers of Connecticut and Massachusetts, saying he wanted to stand up for their right to strike, right? It's the predecessor to Joe Biden. But you're actually seeing it there. That's a big deal. Why? Because when a political party actually embraces its base, when it actually says, you know what? We're not going to use you. We actually like you, right? That's a transformational moment. Now, interestingly enough, the Republican Party went through a similar moment starting '76 into the early 80s. Where they embraced their pro-life, their anti-abortion base. And as they did that, they transformed politics, right? Pennsylvania in those days used to elect anti-choice governors, senators, all sorts of folks. The shift came because the Republicans embraced their base. At this convention, you are seeing Democrats begin to embrace their base in some fundamental ways, not as they would at the level of if you had a Bernie Sanders or somebody, but a big deal. And if they do, they will win overwhelmingly, right?
Help us understand, yeah. John Nichols, because I don't disagree with what you just said, obviously, but I also, Trigby and I talked about it a little bit.
Sure.
We had Sarah Rodriguez, a great lieutenant governor of Wisconsin, on yesterday, who talked about inclusivity.
Yeah.
Dr. Wyerly here, a great candidate for Democrats, I think, in the 8th, talking
doing
the same way.
Well. Yeah.
We had a Michelle Obama, who I thought gave the best speech of the night last night, very subtly telling Democrats, don't Goldilocks this. In other words, don't think you have to get everything to be on board. I think there's the Big Ten concept here, if anything.
Yeah,
but more so than the Republican convention, where it's a monolith and where it's all hail Trump.
See, Ronald Reagan was a political genius, right? Very underrated. He read political journals of the left and right constantly. His aides hated it because he was constantly cutting out articles and saying, let's do something on this.
Right.
We don't have much of that anymore. Most of our political leaders are so whipsawed by, consultants and stuff like that, they don't think for themselves. Ronald Reagan was, of course, the pioneer of the Big Ten, right? That was something that came out of him because he was considered so right-wing that he would scare people away. So, no, we have to Big Ten. So he had Chuck Mathias, who was as liberal as any Democrat within his Republican thing. But here's the interesting thing. Ronald Reagan didn't say, let's do a Big Tent and be boring and stand for nothing, right? He said, let's do a Big Tent, invite a lot of people in here, show them what we're for, show them that it's great, and we'll win.
Yeah.
And the same was true with Franklin Roosevelt, right? Mm. Franklin Roosevelt had a huge tent and won the biggest landslide victories in American history. The most left-wing Democratic candidates always win the biggest. Mm. And often the most right-wing Republican candidates, because America actually likes it when you stand for something. I'll give you a good example, right? Bill Clinton, you're going to hear him tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, and he'll speak.
Nichols rolls his eyes for those not watching the stream.
Bill Clinton is a corporate Democrat from day one, right? But you want to know the thing about Bill Clinton?
What's that?
Never got 50% of the vote.
Yeah, that's true.
Perot pulled it off and pulled enough off in both ones. Never crossed 50%. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, we got to get back to the Clinton kind of stuff. Well, yeah, if you want to lose, absolutely. But if you want to win an election, you might want to look at somebody who actually got a lot of votes, right?
855-752-4842, 855-752-4842 if you want to call in and talk to John Nichols or Trivia Olson. Trivia?
Yeah.
Well, I agree with some of what John said.
Of course you're not going to agree with me.
That's the beautiful part of the conversation.
I know,
that is the best part.
You're a transplant from the Republican Party.
We just had McCosh in here, and I'm channeling my inner Bill. We did win every single county, including Milwaukee, by being, you know, working with everyone, not by running as a far right. Tommy Thompson.
Tommy Thompson's social issues was very, very conservative, you know, and proud of it. Tommy Thompson expanded prisons at a level that was ridiculous. He now apologizes for it. Tommy Thompson did a lot of the right wing stuff. But here's the interesting thing. How did he get more votes? He went left, right? And what did he do? He expanded health care. He literally did.
But you would say that our education reforms that we passed during that era were far right wing stuff, but the people we were working with were Pauly Williams and Democrats, African American Democrats in Milwaukee.
I got news for you. Now, there's Democrats who can go right.
Morris, right? Well, but here's the thing is that
you bring up Morris Andrews, I think.
Yeah, Morris Andrews, right? Like, you know, you could have people who have their disputes and still have civil conversations. We've gotten away from that. And that's the piece to me that really, of anybody, more than anybody else, Scott Walker decided to wreck. Because we used to elect politicians who wanted to do things. Mm-hmm. And that's what was so impressive about the lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. She was a nurse who got angry and said, I'm going to start going to meetings and eventually run for office. Whether on the right or the left, and, you know, having traveled or been all over the country doing races, that's what I found is more important than even what their ideological underpinnings are. What really is, you know, are they angry? Are they a regular person who's had some other experiences?
I think you're totally right. I think that's completely true. And this is the thing. I think you can be on the right or the left, which I think America likes.
Yeah.
I think America likes right and left.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think the problem is that if you don't do anything, right, then that's really... And so what I would say about our politics is that... And I do disagree with you on school choice.
Yeah.
Strongly. and you know what's wonderful?
But it's become something different.
It has, that's right.
Remember, it's the law of unintended consequences. We were up in Eau Claire, and it turns out one of my college buddies is now the superintendent. We had Mike on, and... He got talking about, you know, revenue caps and all of that. No one, when that was originally passed, thought that they'd go like 35 years without updating it. And that gets to the dysfunction that our politics has become.
Totally. Like totally agree with you.
And they're destroying the state and doing it.
I want to jump in here. 855-752-4842. Mr. Zomers, let's go to the line. We have Dick on the line. I believe Dick's listening in Madison on WMDX. Thanks for calling, Dick. What's up?
Well, I can see her trying to tie in what Bill McCutcheon said, and you guys were trying to figure out when exactly it went south as far as not being civil and just drawing battle lines all the time. And you know what I trace it back to? And I think John just said it, the money. When Citizens United happened, it got ugly. Really
I think it was ugly before, my friend, but it got downright unlookable ugly. It was so bad.
Right.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Because, you know, the money perverted things so much. And when you've got money backing you heavily in a certain way, well, you're going to have to step in line. I don't have to tell you guys. And just shut up and toe the line for whatever the money's telling you to do.
Thanks, Dick. Really appreciate the call. 855-752-4842. Let's go to the beautiful Fox Valley, listening on WISS in Oshkosh. Cindy from Appleton. Cindy, thanks for calling. What do you got?
Well, I was at Milwaukee Forum last night, and we left after the Kamala Harris speech because we obviously had to get back to Appleton, and we didn't want to be there all night. So I was wondering, though, because we missed the Obama speeches. Were they in Chicago, or were they actually in Milwaukee?
No, they were in Chicago.
The Obamas. That's what I thought.
Both of them were in Chicago. They're hometown. They were literally a matter of blocks from their home.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought. My friend was a little disappointed that we missed them in person. I said, I don't think they're going to be here in person. I think they're going
you tell your son you love him very much, and you didn't cheat him out of anything.
Okay,
what do you think?
Good.
Just give us a quick, we got about a minute here. Give us a quick lay of the land, Cindy. What was the feel of the room inside Fiserv last night?
Well, the energy was wild, although the music was just, oh, my God, so god-awful loud. It really was almost to the detriment.
I bet we're probably about the same age.
But Cindy, anyway, I got to tell you, that's not the first time the music was loud at Fiserv.
Right.
Well, I that's one reason I don't go to Fiserv. But the point is, it was a full house. And don't let any of your Republicans that call in tell you that that's not true. There was, there was not a seat left in the house.
Wow.
There were people sitting,
amazing.
And I know this is a fire code violation, but there were actually people sitting on the steps because there were no seats anymore. The
wow.
floor of the house was packed. I mean, there were just, oh. it was standing and sitting room only. It was just a massive house of people.
That's a great first-hand report, Cindy. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for taking the time to call in. Really appreciate it. 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. A minute left, John, before the first break here. But what's your sense? You've been to a lot of these. This is our first one for Trivia Night, Democratic National Conventions. Give us the sense.
I've been to a lot of conventions.
on this side of the aisle.
Yeah.
But give us the sense on this one compared to others.
Look, I mean, conventions changed a long time ago, right? They became mm-hmm. productions.
Right.
My sense of this one is, so far, 2 days in, pretty close to a glitch-free production. And clearly, what you're seeing is the Hollywoodization of both parties, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But unfortunately for the Republicans, their Hollywoodization only got them to Hulk Hogan. here, it's much more intense. And what they're basically doing is building an arc, right? You begin that first night saying goodbye to Joe Biden. Second night, saying, oh, we recall our heroes and the people we really loved and who really are good at doing this. Tonight, Walls, close off with Harris. If they do it right, pretty major bump, I think, politically.
John Nichols, thank you so much for taking the time for us. We really appreciate it. Come on back. Trigvi and I will wrap things up. We're live at the United Center from the Democratic National Convention right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Tallaball Show, the Civic Media Radio Network, where it is now 10 before the hour of 2 o'clock. That's 10 minutes away from ABC and CBS News time, depending upon which one of our great stations here on the Civic Media Radio Network that you listen to, if Todd could talk. And then coming up immediately following that, after a sports update from Mike Clemens, a little weather, you'll have the fantastic Maggie Dawn Show every afternoon from 2 until 4, along with Mr. Brian Kelly, who's doing yeoman's work on the board and the cameras here for us this afternoon. We appreciate it so very much. It is Maggie Dawn and Brian Kelly right after us at 2 o'clock. John Nichols, so kind to stay around through the break here from the Nation, Cap Times, a progressive, a soothsayer of elections, as well as Trigvi Olson, senior advisor like myself of the Lincoln Project, I should say, like myself, a former Republican. Guys, the two of you follow polls. You have access to info that most of us don't. I want to run through some actual races.
Sure.
You can do predictions if you want or just gut checks. Let's start in Wisconsin first, the congressional level. The third congressional level on the western side of the state, Rebecca Cook came through on the Democratic side, a contentious primary that got a little mm-hmm. dirty or ugly, at least, at the end with Katrina Shanklin. And you got Derek Van Orten, who is just a dude who attacks people verbally, is a verbal abuser, particularly to teenagers, but yet paints himself as a nice guy who wears a baseball cap and a golden retriever and buys coffee at Quick Trip, although people are saying he buys it at Sitco. But what do you make of this race in the third, guys? Trigvi, then John.
Sure.
Leans Republican.
Cook wins. You get Western Wisconsin likes tickets like Harris Walls. Remember, Walls is almost a local boy in the Minneapolis market. Also, as you move up So I think that Cook wins. The other thing about Cook that's interesting is she is an indefatigable candidate. She works really, really hard.
You bring the big words?
Yeah, it's a big word. But what it means is
she... Want to bet a beer and some cheese curds at the old-fashioned on that, John?
Never bet on politics.
On three?
But you asked me, what will happen. And what I'll say is my view is that Cook wins. But doesn't win necessarily all on her own. I think, again, I'm going to hold to this view.
I think what's going to happen is, here's the thing. We did some research on that, actually in Wisconsin 3, right? So it's on these right-of-center sort of people who would partisanly, typically their typical partisan inclination would be to vote for a Republican, but, you know, almost half the time they end up voting for Democrats, right?
Sure.
The thing is, though, and this is why you get Evers Johnson voters, wherever they cross over... Right, so if they vote, and we did this cross country, Democrat for president, Democrat for Senate. Suddenly they're feeling like, well,
I know the theory, and
so I think where Cook's challenge is really going to be keeping these people who are voting
keep
for Harris Baldwin, getting them to keep going down the ballot, and that I mean you'll admit like that's a Republican plus maybe five sort of.
No, she's
going to have to attract some of those people. I'm not saying I don't think she can, but it's going to be a lift because she's got two amazingly good candidates above her on the list.
I say Cook wins.
All right, very good. Let's move on quickly to the eighth. Then over, Kristen Lyerly was just here. We've been very impressed with her. She goes up against this guy Tony Weed, who I guess has a couple of gas stations. But
I got quite a few.
Well, I'll call it a couple. But he's got this this kid who is a Trump political bootlicker up from Florida running his campaign. What happens, John? Then
no, I'm gonna tell, I want to hear this guy on that one.
I would give, if I were giving percentage odds, I would say Lyerly has a 52-53% chance of winning. Weed 47, but every day that she's out there, she can up it.
In a district where Trump went, 20-some win,
yeah,
win,
but
right?
You know what? Like, I can't imagine that the Mark Green... Mike Gallagher Republicans are going Reed Ribble Republicans are going to... And all three of those guys, I would be shocked if when they actually truly went in the voting booth, we're not pulling her.
Here's what I'll tell you. In that district, if Reed Ribble comes out and endorses her,
yeah,
something like that happens, Lyerly can win. This guy's very, you know, he's obviously in the tank for the Democrats. No, I'm teasing.
Now you sound like McCosh.
No, I'm teasing there. But it's, I mean, that's a very, very optimistic view of that race, but not one that I will disagree with.
I think she's got a better chance than Cook.
But Reed Ribble endorsement could play a big deal up there.
100%. District 1 down there, we got Brian Stile, the acolyte of Paul Ryan. And he got former Congressman Peter Barco, was Secretary of Revenue under Evers. Is trying to get his seat back, basically. John, what do you say?
A lot of money is going to come into that district, more than Democrats have had in a very, very long time. Again, the strength of the Harris-Walls ticket will decide what happens there. I don't agree with this notion that people, especially in that district, where I grew up, I don't believe in this thing of like people, they go find some Republican to vote for or something like that. What I will tell you is, if they're running strong, there's a very, very good chance that Peter Barker could do it. That he will maximize the vote out of Kenosha, and do very, very well in Racine, Janesville as well. Challenge, the one challenge on that is that is, I hate to say it, to really beat an incumbent there, that's an $8 to $10 million district. Yeah. I got to get Chicago TV.
I live in that district, and I just got to say it'd be really nice to know that Peter Barker's running.
That's an $8 to $10 million district to do that, to get the TV.
I know.
But that's the same problem that Cook's going to have up in Western Wisconsin. To win St. Croix,
yes, 100%.
St. Croix and Polk, which is where you got to get those voters. Those voters reside, if it's really close, are going to decide it. You got to buy Minneapolis. And when I ran Jim Harstorf's campaign, it's you buy Minneapolis for hitting like three counties.
I know,
I helped run Schultz's race against Kind. You have to buy you have to buy Madison. You have to buy Duluth. Yeah. You have to buy the Twin Cities, Eau Claire, Wausau, Iowa,
Dubuque.
You have to buy all those to get to the third.
But Minneapolis TV is incredibly
expensive. It's Chicago. It's Chicago.
Now, all right, quickly, let's just do the presidential race. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. About a minute each.
Okay. Go ahead, brother.
Pennsylvania's a toss-up. Michigan, maybe lean Harris today. Wisconsin, toss-up, but Harris is going to win Wisconsin. I'm pretty confident about
Arizona?
Arizona's just going to be... it's like Wisconsin. It's going to be close. I actually think, like, the McCain Republicans might push her over. Like, they weren't very sold on Biden, even though they're probably a lot closer to Biden. Like, but, yeah, I think kind of like Reed Ribble potentially in the 8th, Cindy could push Harris Grost.
John Nichols?
Blue wall, northern tier holds for Harris Walls. I mean, I understand polling, respect it. Yeah. My biggest respect is for patterns, traditions, and that blue wall tends –
I think it's
a ticket like this, I think those three states go. Arizona, complex state, don't look so much in the Southwest. They'll be looking in the Southeast to North Carolina and Georgia. Remember, you don't need Arizona if you get North Carolina.
Yeah, there's a hot little tip for you. Mr. John Nichols, appreciate you. As always, Trigvi Olson, you'll be back tomorrow.
I'm back tomorrow.
All right, fantastic. Many thanks to Pat Kreitlow, Kelly Robertson, Dr. Kristen Lively, Bill McCoshin, and John Nichols, and all of you, our great production team, Mr. Kelly, Corey Hartman, everybody here. Stay tuned. Maggie Dawn is next. Remember, whatever you're fighting for, whatever you believe in, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. See you tomorrow from Chicago. Yeah.